on this afternoon's docket is case number 18-60018, Garden Oaks Maintenance Organization, Inc. We'll take appearances, please.
Good afternoon. Judge Jones, Charles Ruby on behalf of the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Johnny Patterson and Miriam Good here on behalf of the debtor.
All right. Thank you. Anybody on the telephone wish to make an appearance? All right. Gentlemen, where are we?
For the record, Your Honor, Charles Rubio again. To recap where we are, on April 8, 2019, the committee filed its second amended plan at ECF 114 and its second amended disclosure statement at ECF 115. The committee introduced the concept of having the reduced transfer fee of $1,500 in these documents. On April 9, 2019, the next day, we had a hearing on the debtor's plan confirmation where the debtor announced that it would not proceed with its confirmation of its plan. The committee asked at that hearing to schedule a hearing in May for a disclosure statement hearing on its second amended disclosure statement to provide the full 28 days notice to allow for objections on its plan. Mm-hmm. The committee received no objections. On May 9, 2019, we had another hearing. We announced that to the court that there's one remaining issue that we were trying to deal with in order to have a joint plan. It was the process for amending the deed restrictions. Prior to the hearing, Mr. Patterson agreed to mediate the issue before Judge Isger. Following the hearing, the debtor changed his mind and told us that we would not mediate the issue. We then offered to have the debtor's HOA attorney and the committee's HOA attorney meet and confer to try to come up with a plan on how to amend the deed restrictions. The debtor refused to allow the HOA attorneys to meet. The debtors would not meet with the committee in person to work out the remaining issue. At that point, I believe we hit an impasse and we started working on the joint summary disclosure statement that the court requested to explain this last remaining issue. Yesterday at approximately 4:30 p.m., I received a call from Mr. Patterson saying the debtor is not going to pursue the amendment to the deed restrictions. I assumed this meant that we resolved the last remaining issue and we can now proceed with the committee plan as a joint plan. However, Mr. Patterson then tells me he's preparing another plan. He's going to raise several new issues that will make the debtor plan different than the committee plan. Other than telling me he wants an agreed judgment entered in the adversary proceeding to bind all the homeowners to the 2002 amendment, he tells me he cannot tell me the other differences that are going to be in the plan because he is still working on drafting the plan. At 10:39 p.m., I get an email from Mr. Patterson with the debtor's new plan, and it raises several new issues that have not been brought up in the last month. Mr. Patterson sends me a one-page summary of the differences between the plan, and that document lacks a lot of explanation of the differences. So we work late and try to come up with a joint summary disclosure statement, and I have a copies available for the court. The committee's plan and the disclosure statement have been on file for 2 months, Your Honor. At the last hearing, the only reason we requested a delay is because we were under the impression that there was one remaining issue and we're going to try to work through that in the last month, but we did not work through it. The debtor waited until last night before sending me over its new plan. The debtor did this once before. It filed a plan the day before the last disclosure statement hearing, not providing parties in interest any time to respond to the document. The debtor spent over $30,000 soliciting the approval of that plan. It should be noted that the debtor has not filed monthly operating reports since November, so we have no actual way to verify the amount that it spent on the solicitation. But since the debtor has procrastinated and squandered the last month, then when we're supposed to be resolving the last issue to get a joint plan, it's now time for the parties to have a fair opportunity to solicit the committee plan and see if that can get it approved. The committee filed a supplement to the disclosure statement motion at ECF 130 to advise the court that the committee intends to solicit approval of its plan by email, and we included a proposed transmittal email in that document. Soliciting by email will save the debtor's estate potentially many thousands of dollars from doing a physical solicitation. The emails are taken from the creditor's proofs of claim filed in the claims register of the court. For any email that bounced back, that we would send a physical solicitation package. In light of the debtor's procrastination and refusal to use the last month to work on a joint plan, the debtor should wait until the committee completes its solicitation of its plan to determine whether another plan is even necessary at this point.
All right. And so, again, thank you for that. Where are we today? What you want me to do is you want me to approve the committee's disclosure statement and give the committee a shot at seeing whether or not it can confirm a plan, correct?
That's correct, John.
Okay. All right. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Your Honor. We have
I thought we had been working. The main issue was and has been the debtor's attempt to amend the deed restrictions through the Chapter 11 plan process. Mm-hmm. And that's been the holdup. I met with my client at a board meeting Tuesday night, which I let Mr. Rubio know what was coming up and what we were doing. I gave him plenty of advance, and gave him a preview of what I thought the board was going to consider, and in fact they did, and that was dropping the plan or the proposal to amend the deed restrictions through the Chapter 11 process, but to deal with the remaining issues, which is the formation issue and the transfer fee, the level of the transfer fee, the amount of the transfer fee, which is what we've done. So that's, yes, the plan was amended yesterday, which I had talked to Mr. Rubio about a couple of times of what was coming, that we dropped that. That's the sum and substance of the change, is that we are just moving the collection of the restriction on the collection of the transfer fee to the bylaws, in essence binding the board to collect no more than $1,500 while leaving the deed restriction in place, which would in effect reduce that fee. So we don't have to worry about amending the deed restrictions. And then, and that's in essence it. We've been talking about the other provisions of the plan, what we've objected to the committee's plan. We think it's on its face not confirmable, and so that's the problem with it. But that's it. We're going to ask the court to just let us send both of these plans out. That's really the change is the removal of the deed restriction amendments. We're allowing the neighborhood to vote. The committee doesn't want to allow the neighborhood to vote on the changes. And that's that. I mean, we do have a list of the differences that we were prepared, we were working on. We don't have an agreement, surprisingly, on the description of those changes, but in essence, we know what the differences are. It's 8 or 9 issues that are different between the two plans.
So you've, this is the question, you've provided Mr. Rubio a list of the proposed, or not the proposed, but the changes between the committee's proposed plan and the debtor's proposed plan.
We have. In fact, we got that list, and in fact, we got a revised list back from the committee also, and then I've sent him back red lines from his changes. So there's 3 versions out there, and while we disagree on kind of the substance of what goes in there, I don't think we disagree on what the differences are. We know what the differences are.
All right. And so your view is that, and I guess I'm asking, you think that I should approve the committee's disclosure statement?
I think you should consider one issue that we believe makes their plan patently unconfirmable.
Okay.
Otherwise, I mean, it's just the disclosure statement. So we've gone through it, and it's not substantially different. But this, I think there's a provision in their plan that may make their process futile. I don't want to spend the money when, even if they were to get the votes, they couldn't overcome. So, yes.
And what provision is that? If you could, let me pull it up. And Mr. Rubio, I just want to make sure, 114 is the latest and greatest from the committee?
114 is the Second Amendment plan, that's correct.
Okay. All right. So, Mr. Patterson, I have that on the screen.
I believe it's paragraph 4, Roman numeral 4, letter R, the compromise with the Chings.
Okay, hold on. So Article 4 ends with L.
Your Honor, it's not on the screen, by the way.
Please.
It's not on the screen. Yeah.
I hadn't put it up because I can't find it yet.
Okay, gotcha. I may have the prior version. Let me pull it up.
Mr. Rubio, do you know where this is?
I have copies of the plan.
Okay. But do you know where? I'll put it up so everybody can see it if you'll just tell me where it is. I'm told that in another 2 weeks, all my screens will work.
Oh, really?
But right now, I only have one.
It is on page 14. It is article 4L.
4L.
So it's L. Okay, got it. All right. All right, so Mr. Patterson, I have read that provision, and what is it about that provision that you think makes the plan patently unconfirmable?
They can't pass the good faith requirement. Mr. Chang is a member of the committee who's drafted this plan. He's also providing for himself preferential treatment than all other unsecured creditors. In fact, they've just you can't have this provision for a committee member to, in effect, use his position to affect payment of his claim, which he is, in effect, supposed to be representing the pool of unsecured creditors, but in fact, he is utilizing it to bring his out to the forefront and take full payment. And you'll see this provides for deemed allowance and full payment, two things.
That's not what it says.
Which no other creditor.
It does not provide for full payment. It's the same treatment as all other creditors. It's just that Mr. Chang and Mrs. Chang don't want to incur any more legal fees. They've incurred a lot of legal fees in this matter. But really, Your Honor, this whole case started because of this case against the Changs, where it was determined that the 2002 amendment was of no force and effect with respect to them. So really the centerpiece of this plan is to get them to come into the fold and be bound by the terms, so we leave this bankruptcy case with the 2002 amendments applying to everyone. So this is actually an extremely positive outcome, and this is what really the debtor should have tried to achieve even before the case, was to get them to be bound by the terms of the 2002 amendment so that everyone is now bound, which is what the debtor wants to achieve. So in exchange for that, they're simply saying they don't want to incur any additional legal fees to defend their claims. Their claim is about $13,250. They spent $110,000 defending this lawsuit successfully against Gomo, just to put it into perspective. And they're not getting any special treatment. And it was also approved by all the members of the committee. It was not something that Mr. Chang insisted on or anything like that. It was something that we wanted in order to have everyone leave this bankruptcy case be bound by the 2002 amendment. So this is actually the centerpiece of the plan. That's what makes it work.
And the final piece of that is that the Changs had their fees denied by the appellate court, and then they come here and ask the court to deem allow, or use their position to get this deemed allowed after the appellate court denied their request for attorney's fees.
That's
it. With that, Your Honor, we believe that single provision and the treatment makes it not confirmable. If the court disagrees, then yes.
Your Honor, the fees that were not approved were that $110,000 that they're not seeking, so they had never filed a proof of claim for that amount. The fees are two parts. One is for fees on appeal that weren't determined. That appeal was decided on in January 2018, and the bankruptcy case was filed in April of 2018, so that had never been determined. And then the other part of it was their transfer fee. But nonetheless, I mean, a settlement can be on any basis. I mean, it could have been a proposed cash settlement. I mean, this is actually a very reasonable settlement to get them to be bound by the terms, which is they're the only party excluded from the 2002 amendment. So the range of reasonableness here could have been substantially larger than what was already asked for. And just to note that, you know, one thing that another difference in the plans is that Mr. Patterson wanted to point out that he did not include the Gomo releasing the committee members in his plan because he wanted to preserve the right to have them sue the Changs after this bankruptcy case is over, which seemed inconsistent with Fifth Circuit precedent that committee members are immune from prosecution for from serving as their duties. But he didn't make that clear to me that that was a provision that he wanted to exclude from the plan to preserve the debtor's right to sue the Changs after this bankruptcy case is over.
Just to be clear, it's a little bit of a adding things that don't exist. The committee's plan includes broad third-party releases of lawyers and committee members, which we believe in conjunction with this make it not confirmable. We have objected to that. I've never, ever, not one time, have I indicated to anyone, much less Mr. Rubio, that I intend to sue anyone, any particular person, for anything ever. And if that's the case, I would just do it. I certainly wouldn't threaten anyone. I never have. So you can correct that on the record if you wouldn't.
Your Honor, that was the substance of the conversation about why they weren't including the release provision in there, because they wanted to reserve the rights to sue the committee members after the fact. And to Mr. Patterson's point, we don't have any third-party releases. Our release provision is a GOMO release of the committee members and the professionals. That's not a third-party release. That's a release of the debtor. It's the debtor's plan that includes third-party releases, which are it's requiring all homeowners to release any claim to challenge the 2002 amendment. So that is in the debtor's plan, and that's a third-party release. But our plan does not include any third-party releases.
So let me ask both of you. Why should I not just convert this case to a 7 right here and now? I've asked you both to do something. Neither one of you have. You're not representing a committee. Why should I just convert this case to a 7 right now?
Under this plan,
Mr. Rubio, you are pushing me. I ask you a direct question, and I deserve a direct answer. Answer the question. Why should I not convert this case to a 7 right now?
We want the HOA to survive, to perform its duties, and this is a way for it to do it.
That's your only basis.
Mr.
Patterson, you want to answer the question?
Well, I'll tell you, Judge, my initial reaction is I don't have a good answer for you initially, because the court's correct. We, as the professionals here, were given directives. We just haven't been able to carry through for the court. I will say that on a legal basis, this is not considered as a non-profit or a non-moneyed, and I'm not sure that involuntary conversion would be appropriate under the statute, but factually, the court is correct. Equitably, I don't think the neighborhood, has probably been disserved through the process, but they will be the ones that would, they would pay for the conversion. I don't know how else to put it. the lawyers here haven't been able to do it, but a conversion really damages the neighborhood. And I and you know, I'm willing to do what needs to be done. Quite frankly, I'm frustrated and I'm kind of at my wit's end. The debtor is, I think, I mean, we've all but just capitulated to the committee and said, we'll do whatever you want. We have it, but we've all but done that. I don't know what else to do. And I guess I have a couple of options, but I'm not going to presume the court wants to hear my options at this stage.
No, at this point, I'd like to hear anything that's based in reason. And the gentleman that raised his hand, I'll certainly give you an opportunity. Just give me a minute.
I'm doing that. Can I hand out these sets of differences that kind of give the court maybe a see where we are?
And you've seen this, Mr. Rubio?
I prepared
the document. It's his with my red lines.
Okay.
It's his version with my red lines.
Right.
And it will at least tell you where we are with respect to each other's plans. And I'll give the court a chance to look the chart. The intro doesn't really give you the court much, but the chart lays out the differences.
I've read the four pages of the five that have the substance in them.
It's the substance of where we're apart, Judge, which is, I'll tell you, quite embarrassingly close to the fact that everyone is now dug in their heels and unwilling to talk about anything further, but that's where we are.
Okay.
So what are my ideas of where to go from here? I think the court has many options, but for the neighborhood, we have, the court can deal with Mr. Rubio and I. The court can deal with our clients. And when I say deal, I mean there is a pending motion that addresses the makeup of the committee, but I'm not presuming that the court is going to look or point at one side or the other. I'm assuming it's going both ways. But changing the makeup of decision makers, whether that be professionals or clients, these are all entity-style persons under using bankruptcy code. So they're represented by groups of people. Now, we're each going to defend our own group of people, but I don't know if that's within the court's purview. We've talked about a third party intervening. That's always a possibility by order of the court. We tend to disagree with a lot of the preliminaries provided by the committee to the court, but the fact remains it hasn't been done for whatever reason. That can be ordered, some kind of binding third-party process can also be ordered, but and the reason I say that is because the differences now, the court has seen it, and that's why I wanted the court to see it. The differences focus on, you know, relatively non-essential issues, quite frankly. The third option is that the court stuffs away, and the court has, I think, rightfully expected and encouraged the professionals in this case to get this done informally. The other option is to start setting hearings for evidentiary hearings in the adversary proceeding and step away and you know, I know it's not the way this court likes to run these kinds of cases, but that's also an option. The final option is to dismiss the case. I don't think that anyone is served by that, quite frankly, at least the in the neighborhood. And maybe that's where we've lost sight of this is 12 to 1,400 families that are depending on us to try to get this resolved. And unfortunately and embarrassingly, we just keep, for some reason, the group of three and the group of nine cannot get together and resolve what I think should be relatively benign issues to get a joint plan because, and this is, leads me to the, my, I guess my ultimate point, which I've represented to my client and I've told the court, and I honestly believe this, that the only way we're going to get a confirmable plan to confirmation, quite frankly, is if a joint plan goes out. Sending out two plans, number one, is going to create confusion to a certain extent and apathy when there's two plans out there. Not only that, when we come into confirmation, even if both plans have sufficient votes, it leads to nothing but another fight and another hearing. I'm just not sure two plans ever get the job done that this neighborhood needs done, and that is confirm and fix this question regarding the 2002 deed restriction amendments and the enforceability of them, and fixing this abnormally high transfer fee that everyone agrees needs to come down. That's what needs to happen, Judge.
All right, thank you. There's a gentleman in the back that raised his hand. Come on up, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Tell me your name, sir.
My name is Diego Martinez. I'm a Section 1 resident.
Okay. Mr. Martinez, you have, I saw you react when I said, you know, why don't I just convert it to a Chapter 7 now? You want to address
yes.
that or anything else you want to tell
no,
me?
No, I would definitely like to address that and some
okay.
other things. Your Honor, I came to your court in August of 2018 and asked for you to do exactly that because I foresaw this problem that's going to come is they're not going to be able to meet. Individuals on both sides, I think, or predominantly on one side, have been at this for decades. They've been serving in decades. They're entrenched. It's just not going to change. For to be cliche, it's the Hatfields and McCoys. For the rest of us who are not a part of this, it's a waste of the transfer fees that we paid. We've spent on an estimate of $300,000 so far, which comes to $600 per vote, and we have nothing different than before. If the neighborhood truly wants an HOA, we can dissolve this. They can do it to Texas Property Code with the correct number of votes and the correct timeline. If they have the support they say they have, they should get it. But the last ballot, they lost. I don't think they have the support. I've held two public meetings at a local coffee shop, two meetings at my house. I've walked the neighborhood twice talking to neighbors, cold knocking on doors that I don't know at all. There is a group of us, I don't know, minority or majority, that do not want an HOA. I've spoken to residents who've lived in Garden Oaks since 1968. They said they don't need this. They've never needed this. Everyone keeps their house the way it is. It's fine. Everything is paid for by our city and county taxes in terms of lights and upkeep, besides a few small parks, public spaces. I asked for you to do that. Creditors would have $300,000 more since then, or $100,000 more in their pockets if we'd have just done that. And if they were so confident, we could have already had an HOA formed by now, and it would, quite frankly, not be a waste of your time, your valuable time, and these two lawyers' valuable time. I think it's just literally the most efficient thing to do, and it's just the most straightforward path. I'm willing to go and get signatures of people who agree with me. I know a lot of people I spoke to, they can't come to these meetings because they work.
Right.
But I have talked to probably on upwards of 40 or 50 people in Section 1 alone who want nothing to do with this.
I appreciate your words. System hasn't served your neighborhood the way it should. I don't remember you telling me that, but I have no doubt that you did. I know what could have been done for this neighborhood because I stood where you're standing right now for 20 years, and I've done things like this for neighborhoods. And I knew what good could come out of this, and unfortunately here we are, 10 months later, 8 months later, however long it's been, and we've done nothing. And that echoes a lot with me. I get it. I got it. There's a lot of wisdom that goes on inside your head.
Yeah, I know I'm not alone, and I'm not a major. I may not be a majority on that viewpoint, but this has to end. Something has to happen. Delaying this by another 30 days or another 60 days has been done. Still serves the neighborhood. Still does not serve the neighborhood.
I got it.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Mr. Rubio, anything else you want to say?
Your Honor, we filed our first plans back in January, and they were close in time with the debtor's plan, and we waited and let the debtor go ahead and see if it could confirm a plan. And the understanding was that if the debtor failed, that we would take a shot at it. And we did a lot of work. We prepared it. We got an agreement that we think solves it. We'd like to take a shot at it. We never had that opportunity to do it. We think we can leave this case with a HOA intact, collecting a mandatory fee, which was the objective, and we worked on that, and we just want our shot. That's all we want, just like the debtors had an opportunity.
Who's we?
The committee.
Yeah, you know I don't believe that. You haven't represented a committee since day one. I've held my tongue. You haven't represented a committee since day one. You've not done your job as a committee lawyer since day one. I was quiet about it, but you haven't come close to meeting your responsibility to me as a fiduciary that I appointed. So don't sit there and say, we just want our shot. It's inconceivable to me that you could have done what you've done, given what you are supposed to know. I can't tell you how disappointed I am in what you've done. And what I'm about to do, in large part, is on your shoulders, because you do not listen, you do not understand what your job is, and you have refused, throughout this entire case, to listen.
Your Honor, I would like to defend myself. I mean,
you can have a seat. All right. Yes, ma'am. Come on up. That's quite all right. Anyone else? Come on up.
My name is Cheryl Luck, and I'm on the creditors committee.
Yes, ma'am.
I have one question for you and also for Johnny Patterson. What could the creditors committee have done more than what they've already done to try to work with Patterson and with GOMO?
First of
when
all,
when they will not meet with us, will not mediate with us, or have our HOA attorneys meet in order to resolve the main issue of the plans.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. You can have a seat. Anyone else that has a constructive question? All right. Then on the court's own motion, I am going to find that there is a substantial or continuing loss to diminution of the estate. I see no reasonable likelihood of a rehabilitation. I have a committee that is not functioning as a creditors committee. I simply have no choice, and I take some wisdom from the words that were spoken by the person to whom it matters the most. Has to come to an end. I have hinted, I have talked, and it's perfectly fine for folks to ignore me, but we won't ignore the law, and this is simply a case that cannot continue. I have lost confidence in the direction and the ability of the professionals to drive this in a manner consistent with the bankruptcy code. I am today on the court's own motion converting the case to a Chapter 7. Mr. Duran, I want a Chapter 7 trustee appointed as soon as you can get one. For the committee members, the appointment of conversion to Chapter 7 disbands the committee, and I will deal with compensation issues in the ordinary course. Mr. Patterson, you obviously know what your responsibilities as debtor's counsel are. You know what to advise your client representatives of, and you know, it will simply go wherever it's going to go.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Duran, do you need anything more than just a very simple, for the reason stated on the record, pursuant to 752, cases converted to a Chapter 7?
No, I do not, Your Honor.
All right.
And
I
will heed the court's advice and will appoint a Chapter 7 trustee as soon as possible.
Thank you. Get somebody, and if, you know, obviously the appointment of a Chapter 7 trustee is solely within the purview of your client, and I fully understand that, and I'm not in any way trying to tread on that. But to the extent that Mr. Hobbs ever wanted to consider a special appointment to get somebody appropriate to handle what is a very difficult situation, this might be the time to do it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Duran.
Thank you.
All right. And so we'll be adjourned.
All rise.